Good morning, everybody. Glad to have you all with us. I'm especially glad to have Chris Clark with us this morning with the Georgia Chamber of Commerce. Chris is on the road. He is in Thomasville, Georgia this morning and stopped in speaking at a local chamber, and they graciously allowed him to use an office there. So, Chris, we appreciate you being with us, especially when you're on the road. I know that can be difficult at times. So, just as a brief introduction of Chris, he's the president and CEO of the Georgia Chamber. He has been there for about 13 years now. He and his wife, Tiffany, live in Peachtree City, Georgia, and they have one son, Christian, who I just learned is a senior this year. So, Chris, in addition to being the president of the Georgia Chamber, authored a book called The CEO Imperative, which is why we're all here this morning. And I know it's blurry, but I have my copy. I've had it ever since it came out. I haven't quite finished it because I don't get a whole lot of time to read, but what I've read so far, I've thoroughly enjoyed. And it's my pleasure this morning to introduce Chris Clark to you, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Chris.
Thanks, Tammy. Great to be with you guys. Thanks, Shane, for being my friend for all these years. I gotta be frank with you guys. I give, like y'all do, a ton of speeches. I think I'm at about 175 speeches around the state so far this year. And I can talk about politics and I can talk about the economy and workforce and all the stuff that you guys do, but this is different for me. This is talking about a very personal issue. This is talking about values and faith. And so I'm not as smooth as I like to be in front of a crowd. So I just ask you to be kind to me this morning and bear with me. I've started to have talks around the state on this book, and I'm figuring it out as I go. But it's just not my natural position to be in. But I am blessed that you guys have asked me to spend some time with you having this conversation. And quite frankly, I appreciate what you do. I've been in this business, like Shane said, since 1997, in and out of the chamber world and running the Georgia Chamber for 13. And Mark Wilson is a dear friend and mentor and wise counselor. And it's been very encouraging in this effort. And so what I wanted to do is to tell you a little bit about the book. And you know, we're a chamber of commerce, right? So in my head, I have to have a PowerPoint slide. So I do have a couple of slides just to illustrate the point, because haven't figured out how to do like my pastor and just get up there without slides and talk it. But I want to start and say something that I think is central to this book, and essentially the reason I wrote the book. And this is going to sound weird, but bear with me for a minute. And that's that I love you. And I don't love you in some weird way. And I know I don't know hardly any of you on this call, but I love you from the point of view that I believe my purpose in life is to love God, love people. And the purest way to do that is to serve. And I know that's kind of intrinsic on what Chamber of Commerce professionals do. We are servant-hearted men and women in everything that we do. You give, you give, you get beat up. I get it. And so I want you to know that that's the perspective that I come from my job, from this book, my personal life is how do I serve others? How do I make a difference? This is difficult to say, but you know, I haven't always done a good job at that. I have been, and at times, I'm sure Shane can verify this for me. I've been arrogant. I've been difficult, prideful, a ladder climber, if you will. But I believe that it is in our imperative now to be focused on other people. And you don't hear business schools talk about love. You don't hear chambers talk about it too often. But at the end of the day, that's the difference maker. And so I just want to put that out there and share that with you. Let me tell you how this got started. One of the programs of the Georgia Chamber is that we connect college students to CEOs, chamber CEOs, and executives in businesses every year for a mentorship program. And a few years ago, I had an incredibly bright young man named JR who was my mentee. And we were talking one night, and he said, "You know, I'm trying to figure out what kind of leader I want to be. And I'm curious, you've worked for all these CEOs, small business leaders, politicians, worked with them, for them. Were there values that those guys have that I should adopt as an up-and-coming, you know, business person to be successful in life?" And as any good chamber executive, I think on my feet really well. And I made up some stuff that sounded great. It was just all, you know, blather, if you will. But he liked it. At the same time, about a week before, and I just get real personal and just authentic with you, I had a dream. And in the dream, I had a book that was a purple and pink book. And I couldn't read the book in the dream, but I thought, yeah, that's interesting. And so the night I got home from JR asking me that question, there was an envelope at my house. And I opened that envelope, and in it was a pink and purple book and a note from a guy I didn't know out in the Midwest who said, I had a dream that I needed to send you this book. And it was about faith and work. And as I sat there that night, looking, thumbing through that book, doing my Bible study, it felt like a tap on my shoulder that said, JR's question is valuable and you need to spend some time on it. And so on that same envelope, I wrote down all these values of executives that I admired and look up to that mentored me. And then I flipped it over and I wrote the negative values as well. That turned into another discussion and another discussion and a couple of commencement speeches and some other work. And the next thing you know, I have gone down a rabbit hole, guys. And post-COVID, I don't know how y'all are. I make a spread. I don't know how to use what's the spreadsheet program. I don't know how to use that. So I make all my spreadsheets in Word because I'm old. But it just kept tugging on me that there were values out there that were worth us spending time on. And so I started researching. I went down the rabbit hole and I talked to my friends at Deloitte, at Harvard Business School, at KPMG, at McKinsey. I took all of their work that they were doing post-COVID and said, here's what leaders need to be doing right now. Here are the values, the characteristics. And I loaded them into this spreadsheet. Then I loaded into the values that I thought that I had seen that were important. And then I went into Titus and Timothy, and I started really studying the values that I grew up hearing about in Bible study and at home from my grandparents and my parents. And I noticed that they kind of started lining up, that all these new fancy values that all these companies were paying for were the same ones that all of you and I know from our childhood are valuable and important. And it really started me thinking about my own career, where I'd screwed up, where I wasn't the man I wanted to be. And it became a very difficult personal look inside, which I think is something that in this age of toxic business models and toxic workplaces, it's necessary for us to be honest and authentic with ourselves. And so, I don't know, I just want to show you my visual. I went to the trouble of making this visual, so I definitely need to share it with you. Let's see. So here's how I realized I looked at the world, that everything's a career path. Everything's a ladder, right? I'm always climbing the ladder. I'm a student, then I'm a worker, and I want to be an employee, and then I want to be a manager. Then I got to be an executive. Then I got to be chairman of the board. You know, in sports, our kids, they love Little League, and the next thing you know, we got them on travel ball. Then they want to play in the high school. Then they got to play college. Then they want to be a pro, and then they want to be a coach. Everything in our society is built on some type of ladder that we're always climbing. We're always working forward. And it occurred to me, as much as I tried, I don't know that I ever spent the time holding the ladder for somebody else. Shane, I think I was too busy climbing it, looking for what's next as soon as I got to where I was. And it made me reflect on a conversation I had with my grandmother. When I was first starting out, I was in the chamber world about 3 years, and I was a hot shot, big deal. I was it. I was the man, and had all these job offers. And my grandmother was in the hospital at the time, and I went to visit her. Now, you need to understand this about my grandma. Nanny was about 4'11", tough as nails, meanest thing you ever met in your life. And I thought I'd cheer her up at the hospital by telling her how successful her son was about to be and all these new jobs I had offered at, to look at. And the first thing that she said as I rattled on was, you don't need to be so full of yourself, which in South Georgia means quit being arrogant and get rid of that pride. And I said, oh, okay. You do not want your 4'11" granny calling you out. It's not a good feeling. But then she looked up at me from that hospital bed and she said, you know, son, it's awfully nice to be wanted, but it's far more important to be needed. You ought to go where you are needed the most and where you can serve others. And out of all those job offers, I took the only one where the CEO or the executive, he's the chairman of the board, where the chairman said, we need you in this community. That's the only reason, Shane, I decided to go to Fayette County is because that one line that he said is that we need you. And I thought, all right, I'm going to go where I'm needed, which was the right thing to do. But the problem was that I was already looking for what was next, right? I didn't settle in long enough to make a difference where I was. And I know early in our careers, for many of you, that's probably the same thing. That I got the little chamber, I need to go to the medium chamber, and then I need to go to the big chamber, and then I need to finally get to a beach chamber somewhere, right? So y'all have figured out your own pathway. And then after the hurricane, maybe you move your chamber, you want to go inland a little bit. I get it. But there's just constantly looking at this ladder climbing. And so I made that decision, but I didn't do the work that I should have done there. Fast forward a couple of years, and I had an executive position with the state of Georgia, and I had a CEO come visit me. And Brad was a giant in the industry, but by the time he came to see me, he was a little old man age where the tie was too wide, coat was too big. And Brad shook this long finger at me. And he said, as men and women of faith, we are called to make a difference in our communities, to love others enough to serve them. And it's not about you anymore. And I'll be frank with you, I was convicted, right? I call myself a servant leader. I understood leadership theory and all that kind of stuff, but I did not understand people. I did not understand loving others. I did not understand putting others first. It was a struggle for me to move through that. And so on my own career path, it took getting into this chamber job and having a series of CEOs, executives that were my chairman to really shake that out of me and make me see a very, very different way. And I spent a lot of time, like I'm sure many of you do, you know, what's the right leadership path for me? What do I need to do? And listen, guys, there are dozens of different leadership theories out there. This is just a snapshot of them. I decided that servant leadership was where I needed to be, but I still wasn't a good servant leader. I was still focused more on the leader part than the servant part, right? And so that's why I think my life was not where I wanted it to be. I wasn't the man I wanted to be. And so I said, well, I have to do something different. Well, fast forward trying to figure out what that difference is, and I end up with this college kid asking me these questions. And for the first time, I think in my life, I really took the time to dig in, like I said, build the spreadsheets, think about who I was, look at values, look at priorities in my life. And as I was doing that, I went back to that envelope and those values, and I started listing out the chairman and the people I'd work with, mentors, friends, that I thought figured it out, that knew it, that were successful, not just because they had the right title, but because they were good people, good humans. They had the right values. And I called them up and I said, hey, I want to have a different conversation with you. And not one person said no to that conversation. We sat down hour after hour after hour of me interviewing these folks. And if you've never spent the time with your chair or vice chair to talk about their values, their faith, who they are outside of their business, you're missing an incredible opportunity to learn and be mentored and grow. Because I don't care how big their business is or how small or where they came from, they have a story to tell that's of value. And so this book and this process became a very long internal look at me, the values I wanted, and you know, these men and women, when they start sharing their story with you, you realize, I want to tell that story. I want to share with folks their experience so they can learn, because you're not getting this in an MBA. You know, we all went to, you know, Institute. We thought we knew everything we needed to know to be a good Chamber President Institute. We don't talk a lot about values at Institute. There's not a lot of places in any of our path, career paths, where values become center of what we do. And so I took all that data. I took all those intimate conversations with executives. And let me be clear with you. I could have done the whole two things. One, I could have done the whole book just talking to Chamber of Commerce executives around the country that, get these values. But one of the things I wanted to do was to talk to men and women from different backgrounds. And so I think I've done a good job in the book of balancing having the minority voice at the table, because I think it's unique and it's hard for me to write their story. But their values that they come from a different perspective matter. Small town, big city. I tried to really have a good diverse look. But here's what I found. All these men and women at their core had an incredible faith. Now, there's probably a few of you on the call right now and say, well, Chris, I'm just not a spiritual person and I don't have faith. Okay. I'm happy to have that conversation with you one-on-one anytime you want. I have it almost every time I finish giving a speech now with someone in the audience. But even if you don't have faith at your center, these values, they are still the difference makers. Every CEO that I interviewed, the ones that I talked to, the ones we researched, these were the values that mattered to them. And I think these are the values that we need to take back into the workplace every day to have a very different community and a very different company and a very different world. And I know you can read, but I just want to give you just a little bit of the way that I look at each of these values for a minute. The first is wisdom. Y'all, if this misinformation and disinformation age didn't teach us anything, it's that we've got to have a deeper truth. I think that comes from spiritual wisdom, and whether or not you're spiritual or not, it comes from a deep longing to understand. And I think there are three key things that I learned in talking to these executives about wisdom. The most important part of that is learning to listen. We're in a society right now that refuses to listen to each other or alternative views. Shane and I were talking about that debate last night. Not a one of those folks up there ever listened to anybody else on stage, right? They were just trying to get out their own points. The other thing that I saw that was critical was to have a different perspective. You have the perspective that you have sitting at the chamber. You know, your Boys and Girls Club executive has a different perspective. That mom that's unemployed right now has a different perspective. We're not good at thinking and putting ourselves in other people's shoes, but I think it's vitally important. And the other one that we spend a lot of time at my office talking about lately is the wisdom to have gratitude in our lives, to be thankful for what we have. Everybody on this call is blessed beyond belief, no matter what situations you're dealing with. As my dad told me 50 years ago, somebody else got it much worse than you, boy. Yes, sir, I got it. But there's wisdom that comes with understanding that. And quite frankly, going through life with an attitude of gratitude, as Jimmy Buffett said, is a much better approach than going through life angry and mad about everything on Twitter that we see. My pastor keeps saying, get off the dumb book. Quit telling us what you think. Nobody cares. You're not helping things. And so part of that comes from our ability to continue to learn and having that desire to be wise and to understand. The next one is this idea of character. We talk a lot about titles. You know, I got to have a CEO as my chairman. I think, quite frankly, I'd rather have somebody with incredibly uncompromised character as my chairman. That's a different way for me to think. It means I want somebody that's honest, has integrity, it's accountability at the end of the day. I'll give you an example. I'll tell on myself here a minute. I started thinking, these CEOs have helped me think, that you really show character in the little things that you do. So I have a home office, probably like most of y'all do. And I have my setup there, and I work, you know, a couple, 3 days a week from home, depending on what the travel is, or at least at nights. And I ran out of computer printing paper. So I was walking out of my office on Monday, and I grabbed a pack of paper. Now, I took about 3 steps, and I thought, you know I'm taking this home. I'm using it for work. But if one of my young staffers saw me walking out, they don't know that I'm taking it home for work. What message am I sending to them about how to treat and steward the resources of this chamber? So I put it down, and I drove myself to Office Max and bought me some paper. It's the little things that we do, but I think we have to spend more time focused on character than we do on title. And all these executives, one of them that I talked to for the book, he actually left his job as CEO of a huge chamber of commerce, incredible organization, so he could go run a conservation organization because that's where his heart was. He said it was more about making a difference than it was about the title and the fancy office that he had at the chamber. The other area that I talked to, I think I talked more about this issue than any other single issue with my executives. And this is this idea of humility. Pride is the biggest struggle. I was with a chamber of commerce here in Georgia on Tuesday, and I was leading a board retreat, kind of an update for them. And it occurred to me that there, as I sat there listening to their board talk, over 30 times a member of the board praised the chamber CEO. 30 times in 2.5 hours. And then a couple of them have the nerve to complain to me afterwards that their chamber president's ego was out of control. I said, well, quite frankly, that's your fault. You got to be careful. We all live in this bubble, and we love the positive influence that we hear. But at the end of the day, if you want to serve others, love others, it's not about you. You have to set that aside. And these CEOs that I work with, oh my gosh, they could care less about being on stage, being recognized. They just had a humility that just makes a difference. And I had a chairman a few years ago, I interviewed for the book, Hank Linkenfelter. Hank's a great executive, recently retired, just an incredible human being and one of the most humble people I ever met. And I said, Hank, how are you in a global company so humble in what you do? And he says, I've always had in the back of my mind since college, when I lost a job that I wanted, that there's always somebody that can do this job better than me. And I'm just here as long as God wants me to be here, and I'm going to do my best while I'm here. And I think that makes all the difference. And so there's a humility that we spend a lot of time in the book talking about. We also spend time talking about courage. Chamber professionals, guys, you are some of the most courageous men and women that I know. You are on the front lines. You're unafraid to engage in the issues. You're facilitators, conveners. I love the fact that I get to be an advocate for free enterprise every single day and fight the bad forces that are out there. But you have to have courage to step into these executive roles. That's the first thing that when Mark Wilson, the day I took the job, I was telling Tammy, Mark Wilson called me, welcomed me to the family. He says, you have anything I can help you with? I said, yeah. I said, I've been on the job, 6 hours, and I've already got to make a decision about engaging in this political battle in Georgia. And Mark said, if your board is unwilling to lose, then they don't have the courage to back you up to go into that battle. And so I literally went back to my board the next day and said, are you okay if we lose this fight? Because if not, we're not going into the battle. And so we have to have courage. I think it's important too. We're in the crosshairs, guys. I tell my guys in Georgia that we're at the intersection of business and government, right? We're in the, everybody shoots at us from all directions. You've got issues over every kind of social issue out there. People are always trying to draw us into those battles. You got to have the courage to pick the right ones, to know what's your lane, where you're supposed to be. And then not just follow the moment. It's so easy to say, well, this is what the polls say, and this is what the news said tonight. This is our position of the chamber. At our chamber, it's always about what our members need and will they back us up into going to battle. The other thing that I think we have to be in our communities are peacemakers. The courage to try to bring the people together. I mean, Thomasville right now, as Tammy told you, this community has been racked by racial issues, police shootings, and I've been helping them now for 5 years. Bring together Black community, white community to have meaningful conversations. And they're doing that at a whole different level. But it took brave individuals in this community to say, it's not good enough. And nobody wants to have racial reconciliation discussions. But this chamber has built a whole plan around it for the last 5 years to do that. And then, you know, the other part of this idea of courage, we have to be encouragers. Right. I know chamber professionals were supposed to be the cheerleaders. I'm not a big cheerleader, but we have to have the courage to encourage others. And so that's a critical part of what we have to do. It's interesting. I interviewed for that chapter a good friend, CEO in Georgia. And she said, you know, it's very easy for an executive in any role to put their feet up on the desk and stay miles away from the problems of their customers, clients, team members. But it takes real courage to enter their neighborhoods, to care about their schools, to try to make a difference in their lives. But if we're giving these opportunities and these roles, that becomes our imperative. And so we're courageous men and women. We got to continue to be courageous for the right things. Part of that, too, is understanding your passion and purpose. I told you mine at the onset of this discussion. I think too few people understand their calling, what they're here to serve, how they're here to have action, to compassion. Again, we're more interested in that career ladder than we are in actually making a difference. Ernest Greer has been a great mentor of mine. He's an executive of a huge international law firm. And I asked Ernest, I said, what's your purpose in life? I challenge you to ask that question of your board members. Ernest said, my purpose is to love and serve the unseen and the unheard. Man, to love people you don't know and you don't see, and to make them seen, make them heard, give them respect and dignity, that's a powerful way to move through life. I'm not there yet, but I'm trying. And then the last thing that I heard consistently, and I think it's where it goes back to what's next for me, is this idea of service and this culture of servanthood that is so lacking out there. Chambers get it. You wake up every day to serve your board members, your community, but that's not a common thread in our society. It's more about, you know, serving ourselves. I remember, I wish I could remember his name, but there's a chamber executive from, I think it was Indiana years ago, and he had a little pamphlet that he put out, and it was just called Others First, that everything he did was to put others first, his staff first, his members first, his board first. That's not how we're wired. Our pride does not allow us to do that every day. And so I try to give you some examples in the book about how to encourage that, to think about a life of servanthood. And what really made the difference for me is one of my dear, dear board members, former chairman, mentor, a guy named Sonny Dariso. And Sonny lives up in Albany, Georgia, just a great human. Sonny and I were having this, we hunt a lot together. And so we were having this big discussion one night. And I said, Sonny, how do you start the day? That's a good question. You know, a lot of people say, well, get up and have a cup of coffee or brush my teeth or whatever it was. Sonny said, before I get out of bed, Chris, I pray that God lets me be a blessing to one person today. I don't know who that person might be. And he says, it might be something as simple as letting somebody cut in front of me without flipping them off, right? It might be being gracious to someone. It might be carrying somebody's load, helping them. And so that's not how I started my day, but it is now. So for the last year plus, and what I realized some days when I have that mentality to walk through the day, I'm looking for people to bless, people to help, Did I drive 4 hours because I love being in my car to be in Thomasville today and miss my own bed last night? No, it's because I wanted to bless this community and this men and women with information that we had to share. A couple of weeks ago, it was a Saturday and we were going to be home all day. And I was lying there in bed and I said, you know, God help me bless others today. And I realized I'm not going to be around others today. I get to be at home all day. And then I was convicted. Well, you can help your wife today. You can help your son today. And so I got up early, got the two dogs out, let my wife sleep for 3 more hours. That was a blessing. It wasn't much, but it's having the idea that we can look at the little teeny tiny things that make a difference. That's what I'm looking for. And so we deal in the book, we talk about those kind of seven values and then some others that I heard consistently from folks. But I'm going to leave you with one slide and then open it up for questions here. But since I wrote this, I had a lot of people say, I get it. They want to talk to me about their values, about their faith, about how they manage and lead differently. But I kept having people ask me, Chris, help me visualize it for me differently. And I just kept going back to this ladder, right? We're climbing the ladder. And after a lot of thought on this, I've come to the conclusion that the ladder is the wrong visual for how we ought to take a look at life. And I'll share with you where I'm currently thinking. Instead of being a student or an intern, think about being a servant. How do I serve others, my family, my friends, my community, my job, the people that work for me? How do I bless others in every part of my day? If you can learn that earlier in your career, it's a very different path. And so let's say you start there and you've got a servant's heart. Well, what comes next? I believe instead of being just an employee, you're a steward. You manage what's been entrusted to you as if it were your own. And you manage it for the betterment of your community, your chamber, your organization. And instead of worrying about, I can't wait to manage people. And I got staff like this now. I got one young woman. Every time I talk to her, she just wants to manage staff. When are you going to give me staff? When are you going to give me staff? Well, I'll give her staff when she has a shepherd mentality of how are you going to protect others, grow them, and put yourself second, fight their battles, help them think about their own future. And then instead of worrying about being an executive, which I spent most of my life trying to become the best executive or highest executive I could be, we need more statesmen, right? As a steward, you're worried about the job at hand. As a shepherd, you're worried about the men and women that you work with. As a statesman, you're worried about your community. Each one of you are a statesman. You put the community first. You're willing to take on the tough issues. You're willing to engage. You're willing to fight for free enterprise. We need more statesmen. I kept looking for statesmen last night on stage. I'm going to keep looking for them. And then the last part, once you've done all this and you've got the right experiences and you've got the right wisdom, I think we need to get to the point where we have more sages. And sage is not I keep a list of words that are outdated and old that nobody uses anymore. Sage is one of those words. But a sage means you've got the wisdom experience and your focus is not on the community anymore. It's not on your job anymore. It's not on your people that work for you. It's on the next generation. Are you training up the next generation of chamber leaders, community leaders? For so long, I've had people tell me, Chris, well, I'm really not qualified to be somebody's mentor, right? I'm not old enough. I haven't learned enough. I'm not successful enough. You are. And I challenge you to think this way, to think of yourself as a steward, as a shepherd, as a statesman, as a sage, as a servant. That's a servant-hearted path. It's very different than the world's path. It's very different than anything anybody ever taught me growing up, except for maybe my nanny. God rest her. And so that's what I want you to understand. That's the message that we're trying to share. That's the calling that I have. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, well, Chris, how many of these books have you sold? And I said, well, I don't know. My publisher hasn't told me. But quite frankly, I don't care. My whole job of doing this is just to encourage people, to help them realize they're not alone. There's a better path. They can be better leaders. And it's not about taking a class. It's not about going to the Harvard Business Review every month. It's about returning to your values. And maybe your values are a little different than the ones I laid out. That's okay. But we have to have a discussion about character and integrity, wisdom and humility before we can do anything else in our communities. And so with that, I'm going to stop and see if there are any questions. You can disagree, yell at me, or just thumbs up and then go back to work, because I know you got a thousand things to do. And I feel so blessed that you took a few minutes to be with us this morning and that you gave me this opportunity. Tammy, I don't know if this is normally a quiet group or not, or if they chat or they don't. I'm fine either.
It depends. I know somebody's thinking some questions out there. Come on in and ask, guys. You're not bashful. Shane, you have to have something.
Shane will probably say it took you long enough to figure this out.
No, but you know, it's funny. You know how when, you know, you're about to go to a conference, you have all these memories of past conferences, or you know, you're going to do something that you've done in the past. And so for the last week, knowing that I was going to get to hear you speak again, because I probably haven't seen you face to face in 5 years. I've talked to you and Morgan a good bit when y'all had members that had questions and you would call me or you would email me and say, hey, I need to know what to do, how to help this person, you know, what would do. So I've had some contact with you all, but I haven't really seen you in about 5 years. But it's funny because I was listening to you talk about being young and being egotistical and the arrogance. And you know, I remember you were still in Fitzgerald, and I remember seeing you at a state conference. I think it was an economic development conference or something. And you came up to me and you're like, dude, I got like 3 job offers. And we spent a long time talking about what to do and how you should handle it. You know, and then I remember all the conversations that you and Morgan and Alicia and Chavez and all of us would have when we would go to a conference and we'd kind of get ourselves away from everything. So the fact that you're sharing all of this and that you've got this book and that you've succeeded the way you have is not a surprise to me. I congratulate you on it because I've known you for so long. You know, one of my best memories of us is when we came down and went to that Pat Benatar concert with you. At the amphitheater in Peachtree City. So that every time I hear her on the radio, it's like, oh man, I remember that concert with Chris.
Good night. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate you. And you know, it is, I mean, you get those opportunities and you've got to think about where do you go to make the biggest difference. And I think that's what I love about this industry and why I love Chamber Life. Cause everybody in this industry, we're not doing it cause we're getting rich, right? We're not doing it cause we're getting famous. We're doing it cause we care.
Yeah. Right? Because we love chicken.
yeah.
You know, but I remember the day when you know I had that arrogance and that ego and that, like you, I was trying to go, what's my next job, where am I going next? And when it hits you that, ooh, I'm not doing this right, it's amazing how life-changing it can be.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had a few things in the chat. One said Shane is a good sage.
Shane is a good sage.
He is from his friend Shonda up in Navarre. And then Gene Hugaville from Tarpon Springs said, I truly love this. It's an area that we don't hear about very often. This is solid food for the soul. So I would totally agree. Who else? Anybody else have some questions for Chris? Feel free to unmute. No, you're not bashful.
So I did have one more while y'all are doing that. I'll just share. I did have, because somebody always asked me. And so here's the, if you want to read the book, it's on all the different platforms on, you know, Kindle and all. You just take the QR code. If you want to reach out to me individually, you can see my email down there. And then one of the things that's funny, I had people that really kind of helped encourage me to write this book. And they all said, oh, you have to have a website. And I said, man, I don't know how to build a website. I'm 53 years old. And so I taught myself new skill to build a website. But I have a blog there. It's just what wasn't in the book or what people asked me about. And it's on LinkedIn, too. And you're welcome to go there. And I've got a bunch of posts and try to post about every couple of weeks about some of these same issues or go a little bit deeper or just address questions that come up. And so I welcome you to go to the website. It's the CEOImperative.faith or chrisclark.faith@gmail.com. And love to hear from you and anything I can do to help you. So I just want to share that with you. Awesome. Well, Tammy, thanks. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you guys and appreciate what y'all do. You're a blessing to your community, and it's an honor to be with y'all today.
But we appreciate you taking your time to be with us. So thank you again.
Hey, Chris. Good to see you again, my friend.
You too, buddy.
Tell Tiffany I said hey, okay?
I will. Take care. See you guys.
Thank you, Chris. Have a good rest of your day and a good trip home.
Thanks. Bye.